Welcome to the Church Podcast, talking all things ministry to help you do church better. I am your co-host, John Rinaldo, and I am joined here by Chris Wesley. Chris, what's up, man?
Not much. Just digesting my turkey and all my Thanksgiving fixings and everything. Happy belated Thanksgiving, John.
Oh, thank you very much. I actually have not eaten at all since Thanksgiving because I'm full still.
If you guys are wondering, we actually are recording this before Thanksgiving.
Well, don't give away our secrets.
No. As I said that, I was kind of like, oh, we promised when we record this not to be so seasonal and everything, but we can't help it. And happy belated Thanksgiving to everyone. I am projecting that I'm still stuffed and John is still full from, but anyway, if you are joining us for the first time, we're in the midst of a great series where we're talking about small groups, building small groups from scratch. And if you missed last episode, definitely, you don't have to stop listening to this one, but to get a little more context, jump back and listen to small groups and what exactly is a small group when we're talking about that, because it'll give a little bit of context on what we're discussing today.
Good, and I'm excited about this. And so today, Chris, what are we talking about? We've already talked about what small groups are, so what's next?
Now we're going to just talk about how to start them, because as I mentioned last episode, I think this is the biggest challenge when it comes to small groups. It's the biggest challenge because we don't know where to start. And in the last episode, we talked about like how some people think small groups should be these deep discipleship Bible studies, and other people think it's just social gathering hangouts. And the answer to that is yes, it's both. But like, where do you start when it comes to a small group? Like, what are some of the key practices, the best things to do? And so to jump in and get started, I think the first thing is you need a champion. You need one person, man or woman. It doesn't have to be the pastor, although the pastor definitely needs to be to champion this. But one man or woman who is going to help get things off the ground, to be kind of that, if you're thinking of like a campaign, to be that candidate who is going to preach about small groups, who's going to cast vision about small groups, who's going to rally the team around them. So I think it's finding that candidate to lead the small groups, to champion it. And it doesn't have to be a full-time staff person. Although that would be an ideal situation, is that you hire that person. But if you're in a church where like your staff is small, or you don't have this person on staff, then that's okay. Just find someone who is going to champion small groups.
I think that's a really excellent point. It could be a full-time person. It could be not. I would argue that if you have the ability and resources, that you should have a full-time person, because I think this is so important. I think this particular ministry can be so much more impactful for the parish than maybe some of the other things we're currently doing as a parish. And so That's a whole other conversation that we're not going to get into right now, but I think it's worth the analysis in terms of where we're spending our time as staff and what's going to be the most valuable, for us. And I would argue that small groups is going to be more valuable than some of the other things that we're doing. Now, again, we're not going to get into that now. That takes some strategic discussion. But look, if you're going to do this, let's put some really strong energy and resources into this, and not just have this be another side project, right? But really make it a priority, which is why a champion is needed.
Well, and I think we make the mistake too, John, that we tie up the person who's doing RCIA to lead small groups, and not that he or she can't do that, but RCIA is such a different animal than everything else that we're trying to do. Another mistake that we make is we try to maybe tie up the youth minister with that as well, or the DRE. And again, we're talking about a responsibility that is going to take a lot of time and energy. So we want to avoid, the person who's overseeing RCIA. We want to avoid the person who's doing youth ministry or the DRE. If you have an associate pastor, I think, or a deacon, that person might have that ability to do it. Especially if you can't find someone whose sole purpose is to do that. But going back to what you're saying, John, I think if you have the resources and the ability to name that person, go for it and get them involved for sure. you know, so it's finding that champion and that person. And then the second thing is having that person build a team that is going to, and we'll talk a little bit more about this down the line, but a team who is going to help that man or woman, you know, handle the logistics, who's going to help them kind of craft the message, who's going to help them do the research on the content or curriculum that they want to find. So basically it's finding, you know, helping them build a team. I think of about 5 or 6 people, and I'll talk about that number in a second, but find that team of people that are going to help them with the logistics as well. And that's where you can have parishioners and volunteers and people along those lines who are speaking into it and helping out with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. John Maxwell always said it takes teamwork to make the dream work. It's a catchy, bizarre phrase, but it's 100% true.
So true. Yeah.
And we make the mistake all the time, not just in small groups, in so many places. We feel like we have to do this on our own. Right. You know, good leadership is requires us to manage a team of people to make this happen. And so yeah, get a team together right away. People who can also serve as champions, but people who are passionate about this and willing to kind of delve into this new area of ministry. And be careful not to get the same old people who do everything in the parish. Now, there's nothing wrong with that if that's who's available, but I think looking for some new people, I think would be essential to kind of help with the visioning of what this is going to look like. So try to get the same old, but try to get some new people on board as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. You want those people who are speaking into the vision. And going back to the 5 or 6, the reason why I say that too is you're going to want to beta test with that group, right? So before you even say, we're going to do small groups as a parish, this team that's going to help you with the logistics, that's the team that you're going to actually go through the small group experience with first before you even announce it to the parish. And so while you want to talk about the vision and the logistics, that's where you're also going to maybe find a test curriculum so that you can, you know, go through that together with this group and really have that small group experience together.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but now, Chris, you're making me slow down here a little bit. This feels like it's going to take a lot longer time to launch than maybe I initially wanted it to go. And so, what in your mind when you think about launching this? Is there a certain timeline? I mean, when you're thinking about getting a champion, you know, getting a team, beta testing stuff before any sort of formal launch. Do you have a timeline in mind of how long you think this might take or should take?
Yeah, no. So I think ideally you're going to have to like make this a year long project. If you're looking to start small groups now and you're listening, you know, we mentioned it's already Thanksgiving here in the States. And so you're, you know, I would say you start your beta test group in during the Lenten season, you know, late winter, or early spring over here. And then take that summertime to sort of plan, plot, and promote, which we'll talk a little bit about later. And then in the fall, that's when you start to open it up to more people. You know, if you're listening to this and it's in the middle of the summer, then, you know, you look to Lent to open it up to other people. So you want to kind of give yourself that, you know, 4 to 6 month window to go through an extensive small group program so that you can talk about the curriculum, talk about the content and everything before you launch that to the larger group. Now, I know that's going to turn people off because they're like, oh, it's going to take forever. There are ways that you could expedite that, but if you really want to do this in a healthy manner and really build up and ask the right questions and look at the things, I would say give yourself at least a year, because you're going to have other things going on too that are going to serve as distractions. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So yeah, I think the first thing is, you know, you find that champion, you build that team, and then you do a little bit of research on the content, but then you actually just jump into it and experience it yourself. And you talk about things like, you talk about the content, like whether or not it's a good launching tool. But you also talk about like, okay, should we do this in homes? Should we do this at the church? Should we like promote food? Like, you know, how many people in a small group? How long is the length of small groups? Like, how are we going to make these things happen?
Yeah, good. And so let's just answer some of those questions real quickly. In terms of, we already talked about size in in the previous episode. We're looking at anywhere from, 3 at the minimum, but more like 8 to 10 to 12 to 13 type of thing. So what about time frame? So my men's small group was 90 minutes.
Right.
What's an ideal time frame? We're looking at 60 minutes, 90 minutes, 2 hours. In your experience, what should be a good time frame to begin with?
Yeah, I actually don't think, it depends if you're using video curriculum or if you're going through a book. For just argument's sake, if we're talking about launching small groups, it's mostly going to be video based, right? So you're going to probably want to find a video that's like 5 to 15 minutes, and 15 minutes is really pushing it. So, but like anywhere in that, 5 to 15, like 7 to 8 minute, 10 minute range. Of course, if it's engaging, it doesn't matter how long. But for the video, as we mentioned before, having food, incorporating prayer is going to add up time. I would say plotting out 2 hours is safe. I would say no less than an hour and a half, 90 minutes, because you want to give people too a chance to, if you're doing an evening group, some people might arrive late because of traffic or work. If you're doing a group in the morning, like I used to meet in a men's group that met at like 6:15 in the morning and would wrap up at 7:45. That an hour and a half was plenty of time, because at 6:15 we were just ready to go. So I think it all depends on the time of day, but I think 90 minutes to 2 hours is like a safe zone to promote for small groups.
Good. Now, what about? So, I'm super excited about this. I'm getting my team together. We're starting to, we found a couple of different curriculums, whether it's Alpha or something else that we're taking a look at. And we're beta testing that. But man, I want this for everybody. I want to launch today, and I want to have everybody in the parish be involved in this. What's a realistic goal for us to consider in terms of how many people jump on board, how many small groups we get started at the beginning? Am I looking to start 3 small groups at the beginning? Am I looking to start 100 small groups in the beginning or somewhere in between? What's your thoughts on that, Chris?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So this goes back to your team, right? So if you have 5 or 6 people, how many people can those 5 or 6 people, all right, that's confusing language. How many leaders can your 5 or 6 team members coach and mentor in that initial process, right? Because, as a small group leader, you're responsible for anywhere from, what do we say, like 3 to 18 people, right? So that's a lot of people. But you also got to take into consideration that if you're growing a small group program and you're the champion, you're going to have to manage the small group leaders, the point person in small groups. And that's another thing, I think, where we get into a lot of trouble is we form these small groups and there's no leader, there's no point person. And so we're kind of communicating to the group, and one person hears it another way, another person hears it a third way. So when you're launching small groups, it really depends on how many leaders, one, how many leaders you can recruit to start those groups. Two is how many people on your leadership team can mentor those other leaders. So if you have 5 or 6 people, I think if you give them about 5 or 6 small group leaders to mentor in that regards, or to be that liaison between you and them, so that's about, you could do 25 to 30 groups, maybe 25 to 30 groups, and that's being bold.
Yeah, that strikes me as a lot at the beginning, just because your team is presumably volunteers, and so managing working with 5 or 6 small group leaders on top of full-time job, on top of full-time family, might be a lot. I think it's doable. So what you're doing here though, Chris, is you're kind of creating a structure for us, right? So you got like the pastor, right? And then you have your champion, right? So right under the pastor, you have your champion, whoever that may be, right? It's a staff member, full-time, part-time, or something like that. And then under that, you've got this team of leaders, which is 5 or 6 individuals that's really going to vision, and work with the champion on that. And then under them, you've got small group leaders who are actually the ones facilitating small groups. So you kind of create a little hierarchical structure here in terms of what this looks like in terms of support and management.
Right. Now, that doesn't mean that you, the champion, or that the people in your teams can't be in small groups or small group leaders. It's just having that structure in place. And I guess when I say 25 to 30, like that's kind of the limit. When you're starting, like if you're starting a small group program, if you think to yourself, all right, let's make the minimum goal five groups. I think that's a safe place to start. The challenge with that is then we start to say, well, what do these groups look like? Are they all married groups? Are they all mixed groups? Are they all singles? You know, women's groups, men's groups. Like, what type of groups that do we start with? And I think that you need to have, I would say having two women's groups and two men's groups is a good place to start. And the reason that I say two for those is because, and we're talking in the adult frame, is you want to have a group where older women can gather and younger women can gather. And granted, you're going to have some people who are like, oh, you know, like, you know, I'm 65, but I don't mind meeting with women who are in their 20s and 30s. You might have a woman who's in their 20s and 30s that doesn't mind meeting with a group of women who are in their late 50s, early 60s. And same thing with men. But it gives that kind of like choice of like a young men's group, an older men's group, you know, a young women's group, an older women's group. Some churches might not have that luxury. I think then having a couples group, a married couples group is good. And then having a mixed adult group is good too. So having a couples group and a mixed adult group. Again, that would be about six groups right there to start with. The more you can have of those groups, the better. But that's as general as I would, or as specific as I would get launching groups.
Yeah, that's really good. So now we're thinking about what type of groups that we want. So there's not just, they're not all just general groups that anyone can come to at any time, although you may have one or two that are like that, but really focusing on certain demographics. And so I think that's part of the conversation your team needs to have is what type of small groups do we want to focus on? And you kind of gave an outline here, women's groups, men's group. And I really want to echo and support the whole age thing. Like, I get that we want to mix and we can mix, and I think there's value in that. But again, it's about stages of life, right? It's about life experience. And there is a difference between someone who has experienced life for 65 years and someone who's experienced life for 30 years, you know, and you know, the 65-year-old may be retired with grandkids, you know, and you've got the 30-year-old who just got married and maybe has a kid or doesn't have any kids yet, right? Again, I think there's value in those mixing together, but I know for myself, like, I want a men's group that's, you know, I would default to men's group for myself, you know, because I know I need that masculine spirituality piece, but I want to find guys who are in the same stage of life that I'm in, you know, and it's nothing against anyone else that's not in that stage of life, but we're just going to have more in common and we're going to be converse more and it's going to be much more relatable because we're going through the same experiences of life. And so be okay with that if there you have these age demographic shifts in older groups and younger groups or whatnot. Be okay with that because I think that's important. I think people are going to want that.
Right. And, you know, I think age is definitely important. Like you, I like being a part of a men's group. I actually don't mind being on the younger end. I really don't mind it. And that's been the case with a couple of my last men's groups that I've been a part of. But again, the reason why I say start with men's groups and women's groups, mixed groups and couples groups, is because those are something that does not really exclude anyone, right? We're either all men or women. We're either in relationship or not in relationship. And then when you get to age, we're either young or old, you know, and where those lines are, again, that's debatable, but like, you know, we're all men or women, we're all in relationship or not relationship. So having mixed group, you know, and that stuff, I think is a fair place to start. Once you start getting into moms groups, once you start getting into young professionals groups, college students, young adults, you know, widows, GLBT, you know, then you start excluding people from those. And when you're launching groups, that's not a great place to start. It's a great place to go. That's a great ultimate goal, but that's not the place where you want to start. And even though those demographics don't exclude a lot of people, it might, you know, deter people from jumping in right away. And that's okay. That's okay. Because again, what you're going for in your launching of small groups is not for everyone to jump on, but to create a healthy, solid structure. So yeah, 90 minute small groups, 90 minute to 2 hour small groups, The type of small groups, stay general when you're first launching, and have that structure again too, of where you have, you know, the people on your leadership team who are shepherding or mentoring the small group leaders of those specific niche groups.
That's good. And just imagine, I mean, starting small, like I'm a huge advocate for starting small. Let's just say you start with 5 small groups that have 10 people each. That's 50 more people that you're reaching out to in the parish that you weren't reaching out to before. Just imagine how their life has changed and how they'll be more engaged and how that can shift the energy of the church. Just 50, right?
Right.
50 is a substantial number to start with. And so even if you only do 5 small groups, start small, focus on that, because then in my experience, when the buzz gets started and people start seeing the energy and start to see that shift and change in the parish, you're going to want people, or people are going to want this, and they're actually going to start coming to you. And so starting small and being really effective then becomes an effective recruitment tool, for lack of a better term, because you're going to, you know, excite more people, and they're going to ask questions like, what is this small group? I want to be part of this. This sounds really interesting. I see Johnny over here is in a small group. That's super exciting to me, you know? So be okay to start small, because starting small is 50 people, and that's pretty good.
Right. Right. And when you, and one thing that we're kind of skipping over, but it's important, is so you do your beta test with your team leadership team, but then when you jump into ready to promote it, you need to make sure that you are spending, I think, at least 3 to 4 weeks before you do signups, just talking about small groups. And that's where it's important for the pastor and whoever the champion is to be on the same page. And the pastor should preach about it in his homily. The champion should come up during announcements, and no other announcements should be going on at this time if this is a priority to you. Because as soon as you start asking people to do other things, they're going to pick the lowest denominator. And so in this situation, if you want about small groups, you need to preach about it. You need to promote it, and you need to promote it into either a clear, accessible sign up, which can be done online. It could be people in the back with clipboards and signup sheets, or it could be an event where you hold it out in your, you know, if you have a little piazza or outdoor area or gymnasium where people can go and sign up for those groups there. You want to be pushing and promoting people towards small groups. And the things you want to be preaching about are some of the things we talked about in the last episode, right? Like, why do you have small groups? Extension of pastoral care, a chance to go deeper in your faith, and it's a great way to get involved in the community out there. And that could be your 3-week series right there, just talking about those things in small groups right there. But you want to spend as much time promoting it as possible and getting people excited about it. And so that's the first time, you know, we can talk about this in later episodes, but the next time you do a launch, what you'll include in that, which you didn't have the first time, are people's testimonies and stories of life change as they were going through the small group. But you do want to promote that, because you want to educate people on what small groups are and remove any barriers or questions that they might have.
Yeah. And I agree. Love it. And you could do the real public things with the bulletin and the preaching, and we should do that. The brochures, you know, the table outside, things like that. And get those core team of volunteers that you have to invite people personally. Right. Because again, in the end, the big stuff, you know, the announcements and stuff are good. But ultimately it's a personal invitation that's going to get people. So I think that needs to be part of the recruitment strategy as well, as how you get started. Is once you guys are ready to launch, have your core team of people really go out and invite the people that they know. Start with who you know. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Start with the people you're in relationship with and say, hey, we're starting this new initiative at the parish, small group ministry. You know, I'm going to be leading one. You know, would you be interested in being part of our group? You know, or would you be interested in leading one, right? You know, because that's a question we should be asking as well. But don't forget that personal invitation, because your core team of 6 people are going to know a lot of people in the parish. And if they go invite everybody they know, I mean, you're going to have your 5, 6, 7 small groups here in no time, you know, to launch and start.
That is such an important value. You know, you're right. I mean, when you're starting out, you can make all these announcements, but yeah, you need people personally inviting. And this is where I would actually, if you're the pastor listening to this, I would challenge and encourage your staff to get into a small group too. And you, the pastor, need to be in a small group as well. Because if you're not living it, then you can't expect other people to do it too. Yeah. So if you're the pastor in your church, if you are on staff at your church, you need to be in a small group. Now, I know kind of the pushback on that is like, oh, I don't want people knowing about my personal life. I don't want people knowing about, I was like, yeah, people need to know about your personal life now, and you need encouragement. And we're not in that point of our church life these days where we can be the man behind the curtain or in the high castle. So, you know, so I mean, like basically get in a small group. It's a way of you becoming more transparent and authentic. If you want to handpick the men and or women in your group, you're more than welcome to do that. But staff, especially the pastor, needs to be in small group, because it's not a, this is what we want for them. It's what we want for us.
Yeah. And agreed. And I think though, also remembering as a leader in the church that it's not about you. Right. Yes, it is about you, but it's not about you. Do people need to know you? Yes, of course, absolutely. But it's about your community. It's about those that you're serving, right? And so you, one, are modeling the way, and two, you're involved in this as well. You are delving into people's lives. And like, yeah, you know, I may be in a small group with my pastor or another leader in the parish, and that's great. But you know, it's not about you. I'm here as a participant. I'm here for me. I'm here for my own growth, within the context of this community. So don't get caught in that trap that you think it's all about you. And we all do it. I do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so not everybody's thinking as much about you as you think they are, because they're probably not thinking about you at all, because that's just life.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, I think, it's definitely important that we need to lead by example. Now, probably, and there's so much to talk about, and we'll talk about these in other episodes, but I think an important key to remember when you're launching is also to have an end in mind, and then also a next step in mind. And so people are going to sign up for small groups and they're like, am I doing this indefinitely? And while in your mind and your heart, you want to say yes, you want to give them an opportunity where they can opt out, switch groups, take a break, things like that. So if you're launching during Lent, Lent is a perfect season for that, because you can take that break, you know, going into the Easter holiday and everything like that. Or you can use that, like, I don't know about you, John, but the month of May and June for us is so hectic with graduations and, you know, school letting out and everything. So, you know, you could take a break during May and June. You can take a break during the summer and then relaunch again in the fall. So I would say have that end in mind, so people know that they're committing for 6 to 8 to 10 weeks, right? I don't know if I'd go really beyond 10 weeks. Take that break, and then tell them that there's another small group series or another launch that you're doing the following fall or spring or winter. And you'd love for them to commit with their groups. It doesn't mean that their groups stop meeting, but that's when you're going to reintroduce to them content and curriculum or just kind of a path. But make sure that you, again, give them that end in mind so that they know this isn't forever, mm-hmm. Even though it should be. And then, you know, give them that next step of after they go through that.
Yeah.
And to bookend that, also at the end of that, those 6, 8, 10 weeks that you have a celebration, you know, celebrate the people that they went through that. Say like, you know, and make that a picnic, make that a barbecue where they can meet all the other men and women who went through that small group process, you know, and celebrate that. And so that next time when you do another launch, you can invite all those men and women back for a pre-launch party where you're saying, invite your friends to join a small group, get the word out, help us share the story, but definitely put in celebrations there so that you can get those small groups going.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah, that's good. And again, when it comes to the size, right, we've talked about anywhere from 5 to 15, or, I mean, we've thrown a bunch of different numbers, you know, I think for me, 8 to 10 is ideal, but you need to plan for attrition, right? So you need to plan that some folks aren't going to stick through, you know, much past week 3 or 4. And so inviting 15 to be part of a group and then you end up with 8 or 10 is ideal, as opposed to inviting 8 to be part of the group and then you only end up with 3 afterwards through the attrition. And just expect that. Just know that people are going to fall off for lots of different reasons, and be okay with that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. Now, Chris, we didn't talk about this. I know we're coming to the end of our time here. Are we talking weekly small groups? Are we talking monthly small groups? Are we talking about once a year small groups? Like, we haven't even delved into that.
That is a great question. And I know people are going to disagree with me on this, but weekly, it needs to be weekly. I mean, if you're doing biweekly or monthly, you are going to face just when you're launching groups, it's got to be weekly. When you're inviting people in, it's got to be weekly. And again, 6 to 8 to 10 weeks is so much more doable weekly than if you try to do 8 to 10 to 12 groups monthly. Because if you have, if someone gets sick, if someone misses and there's the extra gap, it gives them more of a reason to forget the feeling, the impact, the connection that's having on their life. So that's a great question. That's probably something we should have talked about in episode one where
I agree with weekly, because here's the reality, right? If it's weekly, you just know it's on my calendar, it's every Tuesday from 8 to 9:30 p.m. period, right? You just know, right? You start doing every other week and you're like, wait, am I on this week? Am I off this week? Well, what's going on? You know, wait, which Tuesday of the month are we meeting? Right. Also gets confusing for folks. Now, when I started my men's group, we had a long conversation about how often how often we meet. And I really pushed that we are going to meet weekly. I think it makes sense. I know I need it, and it makes sense. And we have some pushback from folks. Now, it's interesting, as we went through it, the people who pushed back the most about being meeting once a week were there every single week.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I think people in the end, although there was pushback, really agreed weekly was right. Not only do we need this, but it makes sense in terms of a scheduling point of view. And they were there. And I just love that they pushed back. And then they were the ones that were actually the most committed, and they were there every week. And so it can be done. I think it's an important question. So think about it, but we'll tell you the answer is weekly.
Yeah, the answer is weekly. I mean, yeah. I mean, and you can have people in your group who are like, maybe I can only come every other week, but you're going to either find them change that commitment and come more often, or change that commitment and fade away from the group, because the consistency is the key.
Yeah,
you need to have those consistent relationships really to go deeper, to tackle some of the things we'll talk about in small groups, to really help these relationships go and grow deeper.
Yeah, so good. And as we wrap up, let me just say this one last thing. It's one last thing I have on my mind here about this is when you think about the vision of what you want for small groups, you eventually want the small groups to be independent and running on their own without much guidance from you as the champion. Yes, you're going to keep continuing to give them resources and connect with them and see what they need. But the idea is that you get these groups so self-sufficient that they just go and go and go. So why you want that is so then as time goes on, you as the team and you as the champion focus in on the new groups, because the veteran groups are established enough that they know what they're doing. They just keep going, right? So now you can focus your energy on starting another 5 to 10 small groups. And that's how you grow your small group ministry over the course of the year. So get them to a point that they're self-sufficient, that the leaders feel strong enough and secure enough that they know what they're doing, that they can just take it and run with it. And I think that needs to be part of the vision. It's going to take time to get there, but it should be part of your vision. Now, you don't want them off running on their own, you know, so still be connected with them. But the more self-sufficient they are, the more time and energy you will have to bring in another group of leaders who will bring in another group of small group people.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a great way to wrap it up in that regards. I mean, basically, it's going to take work. It's going to take time. Don't be surprised by any kind of attrition. Don't be surprised if people turn you down and everything. But the personal invitation, living it out yourself, I think those are all key to forming these small groups. All right. So if you got questions about small groups, definitely shoot us an email at questions@thechurchpodcast.org. I know some of you who are listening are youth ministers and DREs, and you're probably wondering about next generation small groups. In January, we're going to be launching our new huddle on small groups from scratch. Actually, we're going to launch two other huddles as well. And these are online cohorts filled with videos and downloadables and community, where we talk a little bit more about youth small groups. So definitely keep an eye out for that. And you can find out more at marathonyouthministry.com. We'll have more information in the upcoming weeks. But definitely send us your questions, questions@thechurchpodcast.org, or you can reach out to us individually. John, where can people find you?
Yeah, on Twitter is my favorite place, @JohnRinaldo, but also my website, johnrinaldo.com, where you can get all the podcasts and other resources as well. And on Facebook and Instagram, John M. Rinaldo, as in Michael.
And you can find me at Chris R. Wesley on Twitter and Instagram. You can also find me on Facebook at Marathon Youth Ministry, or my website, marathonyouthministry.com. You can also visit our church podcast page, thechurchpodcast.org. And please leave a review on iTunes. Let us know how we're doing, from, you know, John's mysterious laugh to my great antics. Let us know how we're doing, and we'll make those improvements or those tweaks. But anyway, thank you guys so much for joining us. John, close us in prayer.
Absolutely. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Loving, gracious God, thank you for the gift of our ministry, the gift of this podcast, the opportunity to serve those out in the field doing this work. And thank you for this topic, Lord, that we know the impact of small groups. We know how the church started in small groups way back after Jesus' resurrection. So, Lord, help us to rekindle that ministry in our parishes. Help us to focus some energy into that, because we know that small groups can be life-changing for the individuals that are in it, as well as the parish. So, Lord, bless all of our ministry. Bless our work in this. In your name we pray. Amen.